Hello and welcome to The Top Story, a podcast with the headlines of the day from our correspondents around the world. I'm Qi Zhi. Coming up in this edition, Israel has rejected the demand by Hamas for a permanent ceasefire in Gaza. The US president has launched an attack on his presumptive rival in a November election during his State of the Union address. And the French government is taking steps to boost the country's birth rate, which has hit the lowest level since World War II. Starting in the Middle East, a ceasefire in Gaza before the Muslim holy month of Ramadan now appears increasingly unlikely, as Israel has rejected Hamas' demands for a permanent truce. The US has said the onus is on Hamas to strike a deal on the release of the remaining Israeli hostages. Israel and Hamas have traded blame for the lack of agreement as a four-day peace talks mediated by Qatar and Egypt ended. David Biller has more.
Hamas said that its delegation has left Cairo and that talks are going to resume next week. We know from two Egyptian officials that Hamas is basically on board with the outline of the deal that's been discussed, a six-week ceasefire, the release of 40 Israeli hostages for some number of Palestinian prisoners. But the sticking point is that Hamas wants this to be the start of a permanent ceasefire, and Israel's not getting on board with that. Were there any doubt that Prime Minister Netanyahu had changed his thinking about going into Rafah, for example, a ground invasion? He put that to bed telling cadets in Israel that Israel will be going in order to take down Hamas, and that anyone who says they should not go in, including much of the international community, wants Israel to lose this war. So it really looks at this point like extremely unlikely we have a deal before Ramadan, which starts March 10th or 11th. Why does that matter? Tensions already run hot during Ramadan. We have seen clashes between Israel and, Israeli forces and Palestinians, particularly around the access to the Al-Aqsa Mosque. We have also seen Hamas already calling for heightened confrontations. They put a statement out saying that marches, demonstrations, and other initiatives to counter Zionist occupation and pressure for the end of the war should be stepped up as of the first day of Ramadan. We heard Biden say this, or U.S. President Joe Biden say this week, that any hostilities that go into Ramadan would be, quote, very, very dangerous. Access to the Al-Aqsa Mosque is certainly a very serious concern at this point. Netanyahu said earlier this week that the same number of people would be allowed in, but he didn't specify who. And then what happened is Israel's police force put out a statement saying that Israelis would be allowed in and hasn't clarified what that means for Palestinians. This is the third most holy site in all of Islam. In 2023, 300,000 Palestinians from the West Bank came to go to Al-Aqsa. This is something that is weighing, you know, very heavy on everyone's mind at the moment. We saw Turkey's President Erdogan speaking next to the Palestinian Authority's President Abbas, and he said that if there are restrictions on access, that there will be undoubtedly very severe consequences.
That was David Biller on the Gaza peace talks. Turning to North America, U.S. President Joe Biden has made his case against former President Donald Trump's vision for America ahead of their face-off in the election in November. Biden also urged congressional support for assistance in Ukraine while making his third State of the Union address to Congress. He issued a sharp directive to the leaders of Israel, telling them not to hold up humanitarian aid to Palestinians for political purposes. The speech provides Biden one of his biggest audiences of the year as he tries to gain support for a second term. Nathan King reports.
A very important State of the Union, his last of his first term, and the first since Super Tuesday, which we all confirmed then, of course, that it'll be Donald Trump versus Joe Biden in the general election for the US presidency in November. Age of Joe Biden has become an issue, but he came out very feisty in dealing with hecklers from the Republican side, taking them on rhetorically. Yes, he had a few coughs. Yes, he had a few stumbles, but he showed to be very much on top of the issues. Can I also want to say that foreign policy doesn't normally feature heavily in State of the Union speeches, but this one, straight off the top, he basically implored the House Republicans sitting in front of him to pass Ukraine aid, $60 billion package, which has been held up because of other domestic considerations, including immigration. And he accused his opponent, or predecessor, as he said, Donald Trump, of essentially being a friend of Putin. He said, "We will not back down in the support of Ukraine. I will not back down." He basically talked about democracy being under threat abroad at the beginning, but then at home, referencing January 6th in the very chamber where congressmen were locked, essentially saying that the Trump administration were in denial about what had happened, that there were many Republicans who tried to wash it away. He won't wash it away. He went on to talk about freedoms, women's right to choose, things like that. A lot of domestic concerns, but then saved, importantly, the Palestinian-Israeli issue towards the end of the speech. He confirmed that he will be building this as yet undefined military-built pier for humanitarian aid in the Mediterranean just off the Gaza coast. He implored Israel to let in more humanitarian aid. He was pretty even-sided in terms of his sympathies, but what he also said was the only way to end this is an enduring two-state solution. On China, the usual rhetoric about trade, he did say that he'd boosted alliances in the Indo-Pacific and also stopped top technology being exported to China, something he said his predecessor didn't even think of.
That was Nathan King on the US President's State of the Union address. In China, President Xi Jinping has called on the armed forces to enhance strategic capabilities in emerging fields. He made the remarks in a meeting with delegates from the People's Liberation Army and the People's Armed Police Forces during the annual legislative session. Zhao Yunfei has details.
Chinese President Xi Jinping has attended a plenary meeting of the delegation of the Chinese People's Liberation Army and the People's Armed Police Force at the second session of the 14th National People's Congress.
Representatives from different military sectors have discussed advances to maritime capabilities, cyber defense, artificial intelligence, and the management of space resources. President Xi, also the chairman of the Central Military Commission, underscored the progress achieved in integrating new types of combat forces with the country's new quality productive forces, a key buzzword at this year's two sessions. He stressed the need to optimize space strategy, enhance cybersecurity measures, and take advantage of developments in smart technology. President Xi also stressed the need for continued innovation as a key area in the growth of emerging fields. He called for an increased focus on self-reliance and indigenous innovation. The Chinese leader also highlighted the importance of creating a supportive ecosystem for innovation within emerging fields. He urged efforts to accelerate the supply of new combat forces and said it's important to deepen reforms to the defense-related science industry. He ordered the establishment of innovation, industrial and value chains that align with the development of these new fields.
China is elevating its armed forces to world-class standards. It's an effort to fulfill its missions and tasks of defending the country's sovereignty, security, and development interests.
That was Zhao Yunfei on President Xi's recent meeting with members from the armed forces. The Standing Committee of the National People's Congress, China's top legislature, has delivered its work report. Chairman Zhao Ruji of the NPC Standing Committee underscored the solid progress made in building China into a modern socialist country in all respects. Gao Yiming has details.
"2023 was the first year when the guiding principles from the 20th National Congress of the Communist Party of China were fully implemented. Solid progress has been made in building a modern socialist country in all respects," said Zhao Leji, chairman of the NPC Standing Committee, while delivering the report on the work of the Standing Committee of the NPC.
"Deputies could fully be given full play by representing the people and coming from the people. We encourage the deputies to listen to the voice of the people and relay their feedback to the government. We organize concentrated inspections and field research."
Landmarks of the progress made included economic recovery post-COVID, promotion of high-quality development and social stability, The report said under the strong leadership of the CPC Central Committee, with Comrade Xi Jinping at its core, the National People's Congress stayed true to the party leadership, running of the country by the people, law-based governance, and performed the legislative functions as stipulated in the Constitution.
Improve the socialist legal system with Chinese characteristics. We will carefully implement the legislative plan of the Standing Committee. We will try to legislate based on the rule of law. And third, we will solidly and effectively carry out our obligation and oversight. We will try to improve the rigidity and efficacy of the oversight work. This year, we plan to arrange 35 oversight programs. Fourth, we will play to the role of the NPC deputies. We will formulate opinions on strengthening the NPC deputies' capacity building so that the deputies could honor their obligations in accordance with the law. Fifth, extend the NPC's external communication. We will improve the targetedness and efficiency of our relationship with overseas so that we could implement a policy of major country relationship with the Chinese characteristics.
The report said the year ahead is crucial for fulfilling the goals and tasks set in the 14th five-year plan. 2024 marks the 75th anniversary of the founding of the People's Republic of China and the 70th anniversary of the founding of the NPC. To push things forward, the Congress aims to continue improving the socialist legal system with Chinese characteristics and taking solid steps to exercise effective oversight and expanding international exchanges.
That was Gao Yiming on a work report by the NPC Standing Committee, China's top legislature. Now turning to Africa, severe drought is continuing in Tunisia, prompting concerns on further government measures to cope with the crisis. The EU Climate Change Service says the country is not alone in the Mediterranean region, as many other countries have also been forced to implement water restrictions. Adnan Chiarachi has more.
Tunisia is grappling with a years-long drought that has devastated the country's farmlands. The North African state draws the bulk of its water from precipitation and is vulnerable to shortfalls in rainfall.
The water shortage is alarming in Tunisia due to climate change. The long periods of drought in the summer and winter seasons, coupled with heat then cold weather, have devastated crops affecting wheat, barley and fodder production. All agricultural produce have been affected.
Tunisia's Ministry of Agriculture is encouraging the use of treated water to irrigate summer fodder crops. Experts say that this approach guarantees a consistent supply of green fodder for livestock.
Using treated water for fodder irrigation eases pressure on high-quality water resources, which is used as drinking water. With treated water readily available and quantities increasing, farmers can irrigate crops, reduce consumption, and preserve resources.
Last week, Tunisia's government hiked the cost of drinking water by up to 16% as the country battles with 5 years of severe drought. Authorities have warned against the persistence of water scarcity that has plagued the Mediterranean and North African region for several years.
Water is life. We can figure out all together what will be happening when in some country we won't have any water. So it's not only a food security, it's an international security.
A new report published by the European Commission's Joint Research Centre warns of severe droughts in the Maghreb region that could affect agriculture, water availability and energy consumption. Experts warn that traditional rain-dependent farming is high risk, with the unpredictability of rainfall frequently resulting in crop failures. Tunisian authorities are in the meantime applying a cyclical water quota system and fighting against illegal drilling to preserve water resources.
That was Adnan Chiarachi. Finally, in Europe, the French government is taking steps to boost the country's birth rate, which has hit the lowest level since World War II. They include free fertility tests and an overhaul of parental care leave. But some insiders say the government is unaware of an important fact, that it is the personal choice of some women to refuse to become mothers. Tony Waterman reports from Paris.
It was this bold statement by French President Emmanuel Macron that has sparked fury and debate across the country.
Male and female infertility has progressed a lot in recent years and is causing a lot of couples to suffer. A major plan to combat this scourge will be launched to enable a demographic rearmament.
The comment came just a day after official data showed that France's birth rate hit a post-World War II low in 2023, extending a decade of decline. 678,000 babies were born last year, nearly 7% fewer than the year before and down 20% from 2010. The reasons behind fertility decline are well known. Economic factors are prominent, as are concerns over the impact kids will have on careers or what kind of world they'll inherit. Macron's plan to reverse the trend, free fertility tests, and an overhaul of parental care leave. But psychologist Edith Vallée says there's one big factor governments, often headed by men, are overlooking. A growing number of women simply don't want to be mothers.
C'est juste une question d'inclination.
It's just a question of inclination, and now women have the means to choose their lives. They have reliable contraception, they're financially independent, and they're assertive in their personal choices.
Affirme dans leur choix personnel.
A recent survey by Elle magazine and IFOP found that 30% of French women who don't have children say they never want them. Bettina Zorli is one of those women. She's a voice for the child-free movement in France and just released a book titled Time to Choose, to be or not to be a mother.
This is not a choice, so it's really a desire, and I guess a desire that can be as strong as the one as people who want children. What really bothered me about the president's sentence about like having babies and making more babies is that he wants to link the fertility of women to a capitalist point of view.
France's social model depends on a large number of young workers supporting a smaller group of retirees who are now living longer and longer. But with the country's fertility rate now far below the rate needed to maintain population levels, some fear France's social model will be disrupted. Social Security is already in the red, labor productivity has fallen in recent years, and there's been a decline in the working age population. But demographers are hesitant to draw conclusions this early, saying a gradual population decline could actually be beneficial, offsetting societal costs like public education, and it could encourage more people, including women, to enter the workforce.
It has been shown that it can be good for the employed people to have a declining population, because they will have more bargaining power if they are highly educated and not so numerous. So the economic models show that as far as the decline is not too rapid and not too large, it can be beneficial for the individuals.
Leaving men and women the right to choose what's important for them.
That's Tony Waterman in Paris. Recapping today's headlines, Israel has rejected the demand by Hamas for a permanent ceasefire in Gaza. The US president has launched an attack on his presumptive rival in a November election during his State of the Union address. And the French government is taking steps to boost the country's birth rate, which has hit the lowest level since World War II. That's it for this edition of The Top Story, the podcast that brings you world headlines every weekday. For more news in politics, business, sports and culture, you can subscribe to The Beijing Hour, a one-hour podcast news magazine program. We welcome and appreciate all ratings and reviews. I'm Qi Zhi. Thanks for listening.